This podcast is a production of The Orchard, a church community located in Aurora, Illinois, whose mission is leading people into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ. Visit us online at orchardvalleyonline.com.
Hey, good morning. What, you guys awake or what? Ooh, do we need to do jumping jacks or what? It is Thanksgiving. Well, I know what you're thinking. That Scott Hodge went nuts on Thanksgiving, gained 50 pounds, didn't he, huh? Well, I'm actually not Scott, but thanks. Scott is still his usual thin, beautiful self. I'm just Larry Boatwright. I'm one of the pastors on staff here today. And I hope you had a great holiday season. Can you believe that it's that time of year already? I mean, is it just me, or it seems like this year has just flown by? Maybe that video clip, it was so chaotic. And some of you guys were laughing during it because that's exactly like your family, right? Or maybe you just walked out of a Thanksgiving gathering and it felt just like that. Or you laugh because of crazy Uncle Bob and how he is, and you got to go see him here in a few weeks for Christmas and so on and so forth. And it's amazing. We all have different expectations of the holiday season. When I say the word holiday season, what comes into your mind? I mean, for a lot of us, it's so festive, and it's like nostalgia. I think of New York. I've always wanted to go to New York at Christmas time. Anyone ever been to New York over Christmas time? Oh, I'm so jealous. Okay, well, I would love to do that. It just seems like there would be this atmosphere, and like even the air would smell festive, and people would be so excited to be there. We also think of the holiday season as families getting together. Families celebrating, decorating the tree, ice skating. I went with my family to Millennium Park last weekend. The ice skating rink is open downtown, and I attempted to ice skate. And there were a lot of people. There was like a little four-year-old who was like a little whiz, you know, just zipping all around. So we think of like the festivities, and it's so fun. And I saw yesterday even, it was such a beautiful day outside, wasn't it? And people were using that day to decorate their houses, and that's this great feeling around the holiday season. But for a lot of people in the holiday season, and instead of this being the most wonderful time of the year, this is one of the worst seasons of the year. Maybe it's the first Christmas without dad. Maybe it's the first Christmas without a spouse or without a child or another loved one. Maybe it's not a death, but maybe it's the loss of a relationship or a job or a dream that you might have had this year. Or maybe it's that you had an idea or a goal or a dream that you set out for this year, and you realize that this is a season toward the end of the year where it just didn't happen. You weren't able to get it done. You weren't able to make a difference. And you just feel hopeless. Well, today I want to have a conversation about hope. Because in a season such as this, it's Advent. It's that season of the year where we start looking toward the birth of Christ and celebrating the birth of Christ. And there's a lot of people that this is such a great season, and a lot of people that this is so depressing. And it's really hard for them. And one thing that I know in the midst of all of that is this. If you don't have hope, you can get it. Yeah, if you don't have hope, maybe in your life right now, if you don't have it, let me encourage you. We're going to talk about this today, and I want to say that you can get it. If you have hope, this season is a wonderful opportunity for you to share it. So let's look at the dictionary definition of hope. What is hope? The dictionary defines it like this: a feeling of expectation and desire for a certain thing to happen. That's hope. And when I was thinking about this week, I was trying to think, well, what really gives an illustration of that feeling or that expectation? And it led me to the thought about movie soundtracks. I love movie soundtracks. Does anyone else love movie soundtracks? It's beautiful how they're able to conjure up like emotion. When you're watching a film and the action is going on, it's amazing to me how it makes you feel deep inside. And even if you're not resonating with the dialogue, the music It does something to you. Music accentuates the action, doesn't it? And it creates this sense of expectation that something is about to happen. Now, let me give you an illustration maybe to help sell this. Let's pick a favorite football team. Call out a favorite football team. The Bears. Not the Bears. Okay. Let's say that the Bears are playing, I don't know who. Give me another team.
Packers.
The Packers? All right. You got a Vikings jersey on. Okay. The Bears are playing the Packers. It's the fourth quarter. There's 27 seconds left. The Packers are killing the Bears. It's 427-2. I don't even know how you would get a two. But the odds are insurmountable. Think about the soundtrack that's going on in the movie, okay? When you see a movie and you're imagining this, it's kind of solemn, isn't it? It seems pretty hopeless. But someone gets a gleam in their eye. And at this point in the movie, one of two things happen. You ready? One soul guy stands up in the middle of the crowd when there's a hush and he does this. Come on, don't leave me stranded here. Yeah? Okay. Unless you're me and then you stand alone. Or the other thing that happens is this horn comes out of nowhere and goes, and all of a sudden, the Bears realize there is hope. And miracle beyond miracle, they score 14,000 touchdowns in the last, I don't even know how it's possible, okay? And you know how in the movies, like, they take that 27 seconds on the clock and they stretch it out over, I don't know, 4 or 5 hours? I mean, it's like, you know, like the trilogy, you know, like the first 10 seconds of the first movie at the end. Oh, but, you know, that'll be part two. It's like crazy long. But they use the music, the producers, the directors, the people that are looking at the soundtrack and scoring it. They know that the soundtrack is in a sense, going to drive your interpretation of the action. Does that make sense? So they use it strategically for their advantage. And you can even have a movie that maybe the script isn't that good, or maybe the dialogue is just kind of boring, but the music, the soundtrack behind it, it breathes a sense of life into it. Now, wouldn't it be great if our lives had a soundtrack? I mean, can you imagine? You're about to walk into this meeting and, like, you're really discouraged because it's with the boss and you think he's going to be kind of rough on you and you feel hopeless. You don't know what's going to happen, what he's going to say, what he's going to do. There's no one in the hallway to, you know. So you try it yourself and it just does nothing for you, you know. Nah, that didn't work. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, now, number one, it'd be kind of weird. What is that? Who is that? But it really would drive you. It would give you this motivation. Well, I want to submit today that you do have a soundtrack. It's your story. And journey with me for a moment as you think about what it is, those circumstances of your life that's made you who you are. Your story is your soundtrack. Your past hurts, your past happy moments, your successes and your failures, all of those added up create the soundtrack that is the story of your life. And what's interesting about that is all of us have that soundtrack. And remember how I said the soundtrack, it forces us to interpret the action a certain way. Well, that's exactly what happens when you enter into the holiday season. Your soundtrack, your story, all of your past experiences affect the way that you look at the next 5 weeks. And so I just want to submit that to you today as we take a journey through a soundtrack of hope. One thing that we all have in common is this. Number one, everyone needs hope. A few weeks ago, I was in my office on a Sunday morning about 7:30, and believe it or not, I was listening to this soundtrack, and I had it cranked pretty loud, and Scott was in his office. And I heard him yell in there, "Is that the Schindler's List soundtrack?" And I was like, "Yeah, is that good or bad?" And he was like, "Hey, thanks for playing that right before I have to go on stage and preach." So, like, if you thought his talk a couple of weeks tanked for any reason, it was probably because of Schindler's List. Everyone needs that something, that sort of upper, that sort of internal thing that gives them this sort of, this oomph to go into a new situation. And Schindler's List was probably not the best way to start his day. There's a great scripture in Proverbs, and it says this: hope deferred makes the heart sick. Now think about that for a second in your own life. Whatever your hope is, if you've ever had hope in something and it went south, doesn't it just make you agonize? Doesn't it make your heart sick? Maybe that thing that you trusted in or that dream and it just did not go the way that you thought it would, it makes your heart sick. But it goes on to say that a longing fulfilled is a tree of life. And people have a need for hope. We see it in this season of the year especially because the depression rate is so high. We see people walking into this season hopeless. But an interesting thought is this: those who model hope win the hearts of the people. You see, we live in such a time where people are so deprived of hope, they are so needy for someone to speak hope into their life, that when someone comes along and models hope, they win the heart of the people. Now, regardless of whether politically you affiliate with a Barack Obama or not, whether you agree with all of his ideology or not, it really doesn't matter. I think we could all look at his campaign and realize that he ran his campaign on a platform of hope. As a matter of fact, you see the sign. That's a really popular sign. People saw that word hope, but it wasn't just that word hope. He used it all the time in his speeches. He talked about hope. He talked about a future that was beautiful and good things could happen where Americans could work together. And people on both sides of the political aisle got excited about the fact that good things could happen. And people voted for him. And they came out in droves, often people who knew nothing about what he stood for. Because those who model hope win the hearts of the people. I'd love to tell you about my friend Robert. Growing up, my friend Robert had kind of an interesting start in life. When Robert was born, his mom was 29 years old. His dad was 69 years old. So go ahead and do the math. Okay. Well, it was always kind of tough for Robert as a kid because if people came to his house or if his parents had to come to the school for any reason, what's the natural question? Hey, can I meet your grandpa? And like, he was always sad. Like, that's not my grandpa. That's my dad. When Robert was 4, he was walking down the sidewalk and a big dog came up and it bit him right on the face. And it put a scar on his face all the way around this big circle. And as kids can be unforgiving, even though it totally wasn't his fault, he was ostracized from the other kids. He was not popular. He was made fun of. He was treated bad. And his home life was rough. His dad was old and getting up in years, and his mom was trying to deal with that, and his brother, and it just wasn't a good situation. And Robert was a kid who was desperately in need of hope. Now, down the street from Robert lived a guy named Jerry who was a really nice guy. I actually got to meet him a number of times. And when we were about 12 years old, Jerry started befriending Robert. And I think he was probably one of the only people in Robert's life who was speaking to him and challenging him about, I see something in you. You have potential. Help me with this. You're good at this. And he helped him work on his cars and he did all these different things. And Robert suddenly found a speck of hope in a sea of hopelessness. And so Jerry invited Robert to church with him. And he went to a church called the Jehovah's Witnesses. And there he found acceptance. And he found a community of people who loved him and believed in a good future for him. Because those who model hope win the hearts of the people. Well, the second thing is we have hope. And if you're a follower of Jesus today, I'm going to talk a little bit about what that means, that we have hope and what that looks like in your life. And I want to engage that. And for those of you who don't have hope today, and maybe you don't follow Jesus, I want you to listen carefully because I'm going to try to give you a little scoop about what the life following Jesus is all about. The concept of hope in the Old Testament in the Bible was this concept that there was a God who cared about his people. And that he intervened in their life. And that though they went through troubling times and they had a hard time from time to time, he cared for them. And eventually the idea of a life after death arose. And we see that even in David, after his firstborn child was killed, he was able to look and to pray and to say, I will see you again. David believed in this future hope because he trusted so much in who God was and because he believed that God would do what God said he would do. Because God had proven himself time and time again. And where people might let us down, in the Old Testament, people believed that God would do what he said he would do. And so then it led to this sort of idea that God cares so much about our daily needs and he cares about the fact that we're broken before him, that someday this Messiah is going to come. And although our nation is oppressed by all these people, and although the nation of Israel had been pulled and sent across the world from their homeland a couple of times, they believed hope beyond hope that this Messiah was going to come and redeem their situation. That's sort of the Old Testament concept of hope. Well, the New Testament concept of hope, although sometimes it's distorted, sometimes the New Testament concept of hope people might think is, well, you know, we can trust in God and he's going to give us all these things and we're going to be happy and we're going to feel good and that it's life's going to be perfect when we follow Jesus. But listen to what Paul says in 1 Timothy 6. He says, command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in what? God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. And so he's saying, look, he's not saying don't be rich or there's anything wrong with being rich. He's saying if you're putting your hope in your situation, if you're putting hope in wealth, you're bound to set yourself up for failure. If you put your hope in relationships or anything but this God that this Old Testament proclaims, you're setting yourself up for failure. He goes on in Colossians to say, to them God has chosen to make known among the Gentiles the glorious riches of this mystery, which is Christ in you, the hope of glory. So he's revealing that this New Testament concept of hope is that we can have a relationship with this Jesus who broke into humanity to save and to redeem people and to help them connect with God. And it's this hope, Christ in you. And the hard part of this is that there's sort of this present and this future concept of this hope. That there's this present, that Christ intervenes in society and in history and all of humanity, and then someday he's going to come back and he's going to do some amazing things. That's good. That's a hope. Which leads us to this conclusion, this definition of hope. Hope is waiting and confident expectation. Now remember earlier when I talked about the definition of hope and that expectation and even how the soundtrack begins to bring expectation in you. Imagine, if you will, journeying through the Old Testament into the New, what the Bible speaks, this expectation of this one who was to come. The confident expectation for God's promises in Christ summed up in the gospel. And this is where it becomes a challenge. When I was growing up, I always heard the gospel presented as the ultimate end game of, well, you trust in Jesus and you can have hope in heaven. And that is true. That if you're committed to Christ, you're assured you will walk with him in eternity throughout heaven. But I think the danger and why this has fallen on deaf ears in our culture today is because sometimes we've fallen victim to proclaiming an incomplete gospel that goes like this. God created everything. Adam and Eve sinned against him. And so all creation has fallen, it's broken. Christ was crucified on our behalf. He resurrected, showing the power of God. And that if we trust in him, we have this eternal hope in heaven. That is the gospel. But I think it's an incomplete gospel. Imagine the person that you're trying to explain this life of Christ and explain who Jesus is, who's just trying to figure out how to put food on the table next week for their kids. It's hard for people in the now to look at their own circumstances and their own situation and see how God even cares about where they are when we talk about the great by and by. And that's good. That is true. It is going to be a time that Jesus is going to come back. But I think the complete gospel paints a little bit more of a complete picture. And it goes like this. God created everything perfect. He created man in his own image. And the word in the Greek translation of the Old Testament for image is icon. And imagine like a statue. And Scott actually talked about this earlier this summer. And I thought it was a great picture of this statue, this representative of God, that God allowed us to stand in his place and to serve humanity. But Adam and Eve made a choice to go against God's command, and humanity became broken. And it caused not only humanity, but the world. And all of these certain circumstances changed for everyone since then. So a nation is waiting in expectation of this Messiah who was to come, who ultimately came in the form of Jesus. And he redeemed people. And there is this promise indeed that someday Christ is going to return to earth. And in the words of Quantum Leap, he's going to make right what went wrong. But the cool thing about the gospel is that this gap between when Jesus died and went back to heaven and when he comes back, he left the church, you and me, to intervene in the lives of those people in the here and now. 1 Peter 3 says this, "Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. In his great mercy, he has given us new birth into a living hope." That hope is now. It's alive in us. It's not just a seed of someday it's coming back. It's a living hope. It's through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead and into an inheritance that can never perish, spoil, or fade. You know what that means? Here's what that means. That the God of the Old Testament, those stories that we read and that we've heard about for years and years, are showing that God will do what he said he will do. And so as a follower of Jesus, when you trust in him, you have this living hope, because he cares about you in the future and today. And that's why people in the midst of chaos who really understand that hope in Jesus can allow you to make it through the day-to-day circumstance. Now, a lot of you have heard of Anne Frank. She lived during World War II. And her family actually went into hiding to prevent being captured by the Germans and sent off to a Nazi prison camp. And when she was 13 years old, she received a journal to write in, and she became an avid writer. That's one of the only things she could do, because they had to be really quiet. They couldn't go outside and do the things that you and I would take for granted. She wrote about how she longed to just dance and just to sing and to see the beautiful color of the sky, and knowing that if they were captured, that it was probably going to be a bad ending for them. And in the midst of that chaos, here's what she said. "Where there's hope, there's life. It fills us with fresh courage and makes us strong again. We'll need to be brave to endure the many fears and hardships and the suffering yet to come." Here's a girl who knew that at any moment a knock could come on the door, they could be captured, and her life would go south from that point on. Yet in the midst of the chaos, she clung to hope. It was that glimmer of something, that expectation that something could happen, that kept her motivated. A couple of years ago, I was in a meeting, and I got a text from a friend of mine saying, "Call me right away." And I texted him back, and I said, "You know, I can't. I'm in a meeting, and I can't get out of it." And he texted me back and said, "It's an emergency. You have to call me now." And so I excused myself, and I went out, and I called him. I said, "What's going on?" And he said, "Our mutual friend, one of my closest friends, Charlie, has just been in a horrible head-on collision. The people in the other car, they didn't make it. And he is in bad shape, and they don't know if he's going to make it. And they're life-flighting him to Oklahoma City right now," which was about 3 hours away from where I was. "And his wife was in Florida. He lived in Florida and happened to be traveling in Oklahoma. And so I raced as quickly as I could to Oklahoma City so I could be there for my friend." Well, on the way, I called my grandma. And about 2 weeks before that, we had found out that my 21-year-old cousin Courtney had a brain tumor. And they had scheduled for surgery for a month out. But this particular day, my grandma said that she'd been having these terrible headaches. And they said, "Well, you can wait till the weekend's over, or you can come on up into the ER and we'll check it out." So they went to Oklahoma City. And my grandma was pretty upset about it. And I said, "Well, which hospital is she at? Maybe I can go over there and visit after I meet with Charlie." And she said, I don't know." So I drove and I prayed for both of them, and I just prayed that God would do something, because I didn't know what I was going to find when I got there. And when I walked into the emergency room, my family was sitting in there. They had actually went to the same hospital as my friend Charlie. It was unbelievable. Well, Charlie was really banged up and had to have surgery, and Courtney was really going downhill as far as the way she was feeling. At about 4 o'clock in the morning, her tumor burst. And that was the last time we ever really saw her again, because she never became fully awake. She was in and out of a coma for a long period of time, and 7 months later, she passed away. 22 years old. She had been only married 7 months when this happened. And I had the unfortunate privilege of preaching at her funeral. And when I was asked to do that, it scared me to death, I'll be honest. And when I was sitting back on the stage and it became my time to talk, my knees were shaking like crazy because I knew that I was going to be standing up and facing a room full of hurting people. And so I did. I stood up and there were all of these people and they were weeping and crying. But I was able in confidence because I had seen my family know that this girl was a follower of Christ. She had put her hope in this man, believed that he was who he said he was. And because of that, we knew that we'd see her again. And so you have two family stories who are a little bit different. You had Charlie, who ultimately made a full recovery and is doing well. And then you have this young girl who, although her life was stolen from her at such a young age, I saw an entire family change before my eyes. I saw my uncle, who is not a very religious person, who really never talked about God, never really talked about faith. He began to pray with people in the ICU waiting room. I couldn't believe it. He started telling people, hey, things are going to be okay. We're here for you. And they took people under their wings and started speaking a message of hope that affected people, most of all me. It's just amazing that in the midst of absolute chaos, you can have hope. And it's not that hope is ignorant of pain. It's just that the hope for something great outweighs the pain. And when we lose that balance, that's a dangerous place to be in, because then we start feeling hopeless. Well, the last thing is this. If you have hope, you should share hope. And I'm going to just be real vulnerable with you for a little bit and just tell you a little bit about my story, and I think you'll understand why. A couple of weeks ago, we had an art initiative here where artists came who've painted these beautiful works, and we wanted an opportunity for people in our community to interact with them and to see their work. And so it was a really neat event. And almost toward the end, I went and sat down in the family room, and this guy came and sat down next to me, and he said, hey, how's this series been for you? And nobody's really asked me that in a long time, so I was like, well, you know, it's cool. It's been a neat experience. I think it's good for all of us. It's good for this community that's not like me. And he said, you know, I've thought about it, and I've realized that the people that are the hardest for me to love are those most like me. And it kind of struck me as odd, because I'm like, it's kind of like defeats the not like me if they're most like you, you know, And so I was like, well, okay. And I walked out of that room, and I really didn't give it much more thought. But like the next day, I was just overwhelmed at what he had said. And it really gripped me. And it all sort of came to light around my birthday, which was just a couple of weeks ago. And this post that my aunt left on my Facebook wall, here's what she said. I just wanted you to know that I'm thinking about the night you were born. Although we were in sorrow, you brought us great joy. You've always been such a blessing, and we are so proud of the man you are. You're a good husband, daddy, friend, etc. We love you so much, Larry. Have a blessed day. Well, you see, for me, my birthday every year is bittersweet for my whole family. And it all goes back to my soundtrack, my story. You see, my dad got killed in a car accident 5 days before I was born. And so my mom spent my dad's funeral with a full-term baby in her belly. I can't imagine what it would be like to be 21 years old and to have a 4-year-old child and a brand new baby and to lose my spouse. And I could only imagine that for my mom, all hope was lost. So she responded in a way that was really difficult. She turned to drugs. She turned to alcohol. She became very promiscuous. She didn't care about her body. She didn't care about her life. She had lost the thing that was most important to her. And she had a burden to bear that the average person didn't have. And so as she started trying to process this, you marry that to the fact that she grew up in a very abusive home. And some things happened to her when she was a little girl that should never happen to anyone. And she didn't know how to react. And so the way that it was birthed out in our relationship was abuse. And the men that she was drawn to were abusive men who were very abusive and hurtful to her. Not just physically, but verbally. When I was 8 months old, I had pneumonia and I was crying. And someone in my house thought they wanted to shut me up. And so the way that they chose to do that was to pick me up and throw me against a wall. And it broke both my wrist and my left leg. And my mom didn't know what to do, and she took me to my grandma's, my dad's mom, who's an amazing woman, and dropped me off. And my grandma took me to the hospital, and the district attorney showed up and told her what had happened. And that was kind of my life, that volleying between a mom who had no idea how to raise me, who became very aggressive with me. And the men that she had around her talked to me. And this is my example as a father in my life. These men would always tell me that I was a loser, that I was a no good for nothing. I was told from a very young age that I was worthless, that by the time I was 21, I was going to be in prison, that my life counted for nothing. These are the things that are a part of my soundtrack, my story. When I was 10 years old, this man, this elderly guy down the road came and asked me if I wanted to go to church with him. And I was like, you know what? I will do anything to get out of the house away from my parents. So let us go. There was no cool children's program. We had no great teachers. It was a church of like 25 people who all were family, you know what I mean? But I wanted to go. And one week I heard the pastor talking about a relationship with Jesus. I don't even remember what he was talking about, but I knew when he started talking about this relationship with Jesus, I saw a glimpse of hope and what that could be. And so I went down and talked to him about it, and I chose as a 10-year-old to follow Christ. And I'd love to be able to say that like from then on I was like the perfect kid. And I came home and like I had angel's wings. But I went home and I told my mom and my dad and I said, hey, today I chose to follow Jesus. I got saved today. And their response was, saved from what? And I'm like, I don't know. I just trust in Jesus today. And it wasn't like empty, like I really meant it. So don't get me wrong that it was like, I had no idea what was going on. I did. I just was a 10-year-old theologian, you know. It's not like I had the Bible memorized. So my mom said, well, why would you choose to follow a God who allows so much suffering in this world, who allows so much hurt, who would take husbands away from their wives and fathers away from their kids? And as a 10-year-old, I had no answers. And like at that time in my life, I'm like, you know what would be great right now? If I had somebody that would just cheer me on, you know what I'm saying? It really would have freaked me out at 10 years old if the horn would have started playing. I thought I am checking myself in somewhere because this is messed up, but... Over junior high and high school, I partied a lot. I spent a lot of time with people who were not followers of Jesus. I never went to church. I lived way out in the country, way away from all my friends, and so I couldn't connect with other people of like faith. And so I walked real far from God. He was always a part of my life in the back of my mind. I knew the commitment that I had made, but I chose not to follow and really follow him. And 3 days before I was 17, my mom and I got in this horrible argument, and she kicked me out of the house. And it was like one of those movies where you pack the one suitcase and you take off walking. And so I'm almost 17 and I'm walking down the road because I didn't have a car and it starts raining. And I'm like, it's just like a movie, you know. The tension in the soundtrack is thick. And my friend picked me up and I lived in his basement for 3 days with his dogs. And they really stunk. And I had to ask myself, what am I doing? You know? I mean, I don't even know. It's amazing as a 17-year-old, you can't even see your whole life in front of you because everything is so right now. And sometimes even at 32 years old, it feels that way, doesn't it? Or 45, or wherever you might be today. Hope was lost once again. On my 17th birthday, I called my grandma and I told her what had happened, and she said, I will be there tomorrow. And she drove from Oklahoma to Missouri, and she picked me up. and I went to live with her. When I first moved in with her, she was like really religious. Because I hadn't been around church in a long time. She talked about Jesus all the time. Like, it was like this personal thing, and like constantly, like, Jesus this and Jesus that. And we have a family Bible study on Thursdays, and you should come. And we're studying verse by verse through the book of Leviticus. And I'm like, I'm 17. There's a way to start a new life. Yeah. And she had spent all this money on all these books, you know, that talked about Jesus and commentaries and dictionaries and all this stuff. And I'm like, you were such a geek. And that money could have went through for great things, like a car for me. Which is funny, because if you know me now, I have bookshelves filled with books about Jesus, and I study the Bible and talk about Jesus a lot. And so I moved to this new school, which is the greatest thing, because I had a chance to start a whole new life my junior year. I'd went to school with everybody since second grade, and then I walked into a school that was much bigger, and I had a graduating class before of like 30, and then I went from that to a graduating class of like 390 or something. And I remember, like, my first week at this humongous high school, someone had taken some of those Black Cat firecrackers and thrown them in a locker and lit them. And I had always heard that these big schools, man, they were violent, and people were, you know, shooting all the time and this sort of stuff. So I hit the deck. I mean, it was like a machine. I'm on the ground. Everybody's laughing. I'm like, yeah, I just made a really great impression. So I started dating this girl, and let me just preface this this way. I started dating a girl named Cookie. Why are you laughing? If your name is Cookie, let me just apologize in advance, because I in no way mean this to be offensive to you. Cookie was not a great person, not a great influence in my life. She really pressured me to do things that brought me to this, sort of this crisis point of, like, I have this commitment from a while back to Jesus, and I hear my grandma talking about him, and then here she's pressuring me to go down this path. And I realized, did you know that most people who come out of abusive or hurtful situations, they go one of two sort of ways. It's like you can either live the way that you were raised, or you can choose to go the opposite path. You know what I mean? And so I felt like, as a 17-year-old kid, this huge burden to make a choice. Which way am I going to go? And by God's grace and his mercy, I decided, you know what? I'm going to give this Jesus thing a serious go. And so we were on the phone one night, Cookie and I. We talked on the phone a lot. And we had, my grandma had this phone in the kitchen. It was one with like the 47-foot long cord that was all like the windy, and you never could keep it straight. It got all tangled, you know what I'm saying? And so you were like, you'd be walking, and then it would shoot out of your hands across the room, and that's the one, yeah. Yeah. And so I was having this conversation with Cookie, and I said, you know what, I'm in a turning point, and here's what I decided. When I was 10, I decided to become a follower of Jesus. And I think I'm going to take that really seriously. I think that deserves my attention. I'm going to give it a go. And I'm going to walk with him, and I'm going to read the Bible, and I'm going to try to get into this a little more, and I'm going to start attending church regularly and try to connect with other people who follow Jesus. And I sure would love it if you would take that journey with me. And you'd be surprised to know that she promptly hung up on me. Right? You didn't see that one coming, did you? Well, I got involved in church, I got involved in ministry, I started helping in our youth ministry, and after high school, I had the privilege and opportunity to travel around the country for several years, telling people my story and my background, and trying to help them see that Jesus cares about your daily needs. And for several years, I was able to speak to people who were hurting, who were broken, who were wounded, a lot of people who had a similar background to me, and I felt like I was able to make a real difference. For a long time. And then I got married, and I had a great wife, and I had a couple of great kids, two amazing boys. And I kind of reached this place, I guess, somewhere in my mid-20s where I felt like I'm okay. I kind of made it. I didn't turn out to be that other guy. And I think that's probably around the time where I started alienating those people most like me, who were broken and wounded. And so back to the story of the guy here who asked me what I got out of the series, and he said this whole thing, God used him to smack me in the face. Because I realized that the people that I'm most poised to reach, who are most like me, I have kept at arm's length. Because I've tried to change my song. I tried to play the wrong music in my life. I tried to play a soundtrack for someone else of this guy who's got it all together, and that was just some other guy in his past. But the reality is that our stories make us who we are. And as Scott beautifully talked about last week, we look at what's our pain. And for me, I had this whole pain. And what's in my hand is a journey of a real person with real needs and real hurts. And for too long, I've allowed those who are hopeless and broken and wounded to stay at arm's length because I just didn't want to have to think about it anymore, and I thought I was over it. And I played the wrong song. You see, I think we're in this place right now, in this holiday season, where as a community of believers, we can make a real difference with people who are really hurting if we'll embrace our own journey. There's a beautiful picture in Romans 15 of this kind of community, and I'm not going to read all of this, but Paul is really talking to people about bearing with one another, about how messy community can be, but how we should spend time with one another and accept each other the way that we are, and how our stories should come together to this point. And here's what he says. He says, and you don't need to put this up, he said, then if we do all these things, if we serve one another, if we love one another, if we find the hurting and help them, then we'll be a choir. Not our voices only, but our very lives singing in harmony in a stunning anthem to the God and Father of our Master Jesus. What a beautiful soundtrack. And you know, that's the kind of community I want to be a part of. And that's what I saw here at the Orchard. And that's why our family got really excited about moving from Texas to come be a part of this community, because everyone here has a unique story. You have a unique song to contribute to the story, and you love one another. And you love people far from God in this community. You have a track record of doing that. And I love that. One of the things I love the most about soundtracks is how they're not all the same sounding song. You know what I mean? If they were all like solemn, that'd be kind of a really depressing soundtrack. Some are really messy sounding. Some are really upbeat and exciting. And all of us as this community, the Orchard community, and even beyond, who you have a story and you embrace your story at a critical season like this where people are desperate for someone to speak into their life, all of those songs come together and make this playlist, this soundtrack that is beautiful, just like that choir singing in unison. Well, there's this guy named Eddie Buchanan I want to tell you about really quickly. And if you Google him, the only thing you'll find really is that he's 95 years old and that his dad's name is Joseph and that he lives in Missouri. And if you were to interview his neighbors, you'd find out he still mows his yard and he still drives his wife to church every week. And he's an all-around good guy, hardworking, built a life for himself with his own two hands. But to me, Eddie Buchanan is a hero. Because at 10 years of age, I got to meet this guy who went out of his way to come to my house and invite me to go to church. And at a time when I needed hope and I saw none, Eddie shared with me and he took me to church. And because of it, we both have a great inheritance. The big idea today, if you don't have hope, you can get it. And if you're in this room and you don't have it, I hope you know that there are people in this community who will bend over backwards to show you the hope of Christ. And if you're in this room and you have hope, you should share it. And I've been really honest with you about my own journey. And I feel an honor to be able to even share with you about that. It's personal to me. I'm still wrestling with it. But I have hope, and I've seen God do some pretty amazing things. As a matter of fact, my mom and I have been making a real effort the last couple of years to start a new relationship. And it's kind of blowing my mind and messing with me a little bit to see God redeem something that was so broken. And she's apologized for the way things went. And so I'm interested in rebuilding that, and my kids knowing her as grandma. So I've shared my story. I played a little of my soundtrack for you, and it contributes to the whole, but I want to ask you right now, where are you? Maybe you are as hopeless as you've ever been this season. And the thought of entering another holiday season when everyone seems so happy but you is just wrecking you on the inside. I just want to invite you today to let God begin to breathe life into your soundtrack. That God can use what's really, really broken and turn it into something amazingly beautiful. Maybe you just want things to change, or you're just tired of not getting there. Well, welcome to the journey, and just know that there's a whole crowd full of people who are just struggling on the journey, and that is okay. And I want to take a couple of minutes and just pray, and then we're going to just celebrate Christ, the solid rock, here in a moment by singing a song. And I just want to pray for you if you're in any of those places, that you need hope today desperately. I want to pray that you would find it in Jesus. And I want to challenge you to take a step, that there is a community of people who have hope beyond hope. This everlasting by and by, yes, but also today. And they realize that they're standing in the gap as the church to love you, and they just want to love you. So grab someone today and just say, I need help. And let the church take care of you. Let people love you for who you are and help walk with you on your journey. And if you have hope today, I just pray right now that you would begin to take this time and reflect on how you might be able to share that. Maybe it's just listening to someone. Maybe it's going out of your way to do something like Eddie Buchanan did and just invite them to be a part of what God's doing in the midst of this community. Maybe it's taking someone a meal this season. Maybe it's finding that single mom who's working two jobs and can't afford to get her kids anything for Christmas, and it's stepping. Maybe it's jumping in with our Love, Serve, Give that we're doing this season. But would you let God use you? The last verse of that passage in Romans 15 says, oh, may the God of green hope fill you up with joy. Fill you up with peace so that your believing lives, filled with the life-giving energy of the Holy Spirit, will brim over with hope. And that is my prayer for you. So let's just take a moment and just reflect wherever you are. God, I thank you for who you are. I thank you that you have so much compassion and that your mercy is so strong, and that you redeem what's broken and fragmented. And for those this morning who are wounded and needy and hurting, console them. Surround them with people who will love them until it hurts, who will give them a safe place to have a messy journey. And for those who have hope today, thank you that they're willing to be authentic and real with one another and connect with other people who will spur them on in their journey. And I pray that our arms would open wide and look within this community and into our community at large in this area to people who are hurting and desperately needy of someone to speak hope into their life in practical ways. Let us be a community that does that. And as our story each contributes to this beautiful soundtrack, although it's messy sometimes, we know that ultimately it makes beautiful music to you. And so I just pray that you would share hope with our hearts today. And we love you, and we thank you. In Jesus' name, amen. We're going to sing a familiar song to some of you, and if you don't know the words, just let these just soak in your heart. Our hope is in Jesus, who is and was and is to come. Let him speak to you today.
This podcast is a production of The Orchard, a church community located in Aurora, Illinois, whose mission is leading people into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ. Visit us online at orchardvalleyonline.com.